This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this week. We'll hear first this time from The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, a series we haven't heard from in quite a while. The episode's titled Shore Leave and the Unhappy Wife. This one first aired September 25th, 1947. And it's our suspense replay portion of the show. We'll hear Parole to Panic, an episode from April 12th, 1954.
Log entry, the catch Scarlet Queen. Position, 3 degrees 7 minutes north, 104 degrees 2 minutes east. Wind brisk, sky fair. Remarks, departed Singapore after altercation with deputy public prosecutor. Reason for incident, shore leave and the unhappy wife. Days out of Haiphong that we rounded Point Lima, left the China Sea astern, glowing like gold in the strong afternoon sun, and passed through Singapore Strait to find mooring at the Peninsula Company docks just south of Raffles Quay. My chief mate Gallagher and I left the ship as soon as she was secure and hailed a cab. Hotel Metropole, Charlie! I'd been hit periodically with a feeling akin to sickness for 3 or 4 days before our Singapore arrival. And it gnawed at me more severely than ever now that I was separated from the hotel only by minutes. Part relief, part apprehension, part disbelief that I was actually here and almost face to face with Kuji Kang, the man who'd drawn me all the way from San Francisco, was ready to send me farther into I didn't know what on the voyage of the Scarlet Queen. As we walked through the lobby of the Metropole, I had the feeling that I and I alone had ever been in a situation just like this. I wondered if I looked as conspicuous as I felt, and whether the little British desk clerk caught the shake of my voice as I told him to phone Kang's room. I wondered if he was smiling at the strain even I could feel in the way I looked at him as he came back from the switchboard.
The Honorable Kuji Kang is in, and he will see.
After everything, after sweating and bleeding for over 13,000 miles, and after fighting and killing, after giving up and starting it all over again. That's how I was notified of my final success. As if I'd dropped in from the next hotel. The Honorable Kuji Kang is in and he will see you. That's what the man said.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in the strange Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Philip.
Hello, Kang.
Philip, my son.
How are you, Kang?
Now, I am all right, Philip. You are here.
Oh, Red, I'd like to have you meet Kuji Kang. This is Mr. Gallagher, my chief mate.
How do you do?
It is my honor, Mr. Gallagher.
Thanks, Mr. Kang. Thanks very much. It's been a long time, Kang. Now that we're here and we've found you and everything.
It's a real little letdown, sir.
It's a little hard to believe.
Of course. I am filled with the same feelings. So, I have collected on the table here as American an assortment of liquor as I was able to find in Singapore. This bottle, for example, they tell me it is called corn squeezings in certain sections of your country.
Kang, you're wonderful.
White mule.
Please, help yourself.
You'll have a drink with us, Kang?
I believe it is better that I die in ignorance of the effects of corn in this particular form. I have here my wine, and my spirit will be the same.
An important drink, Kang.
It is indeed. Therefore, one before which we should hesitate not one instant. Philip?
Webb?
Skipper?
And now, Philip, I would like to speak to you in privacy for a few minutes. You would not mind, Mr. Gallagher?
Oh, no, it's all right with me, sir.
Yeah, with a spread like this, it ought to be.
We will rejoin you shortly. In the meantime, I'm expecting two other guests, Mr. and Mrs. Harry Marlowe. Should they arrive, please introduce yourself and give them my welcome.
Yes, sir.
In here, Philip?
Yeah, sure.
Philip, my son, the pride I feel for you fills my heart, and it must overflow.
Thank you, Kang.
Although you must have felt from time to time that my hand gave you little but negligence, please know that from the beginning of the voyage of the Scarlet Queen in San Francisco, I have been aware of your constant courage, the difficulties that faced you, your progress. My daughter herself at least partially described to you the value of the treasure after which you have been sailing, and which has been the basis for all the attacks upon you.
That's right, sir.
Constantino has not yet, and I fear will not until the last moment, halt his efforts to gain the treasure for himself. His goal is personal profit. Mine, I say simply, is to recover the treasure for my country, to which it is of untold value. Because in it are relics from each of the dynasties from centuries B.C. to the most recent. As you have been told, there are two ivory tablets from the first, or Yin.
As he talked, I felt myself filling with the same sense of urgency that had taken me when I originally signed with him in Shanghai almost 2 years before. Maybe it was a type of hypnotism. Maybe it was that through his great personality, the magic of China's past actually reached through and held me. Whatever it was, I knew again as I'd known before that it was something more than my signature on a Chinese contract that kept me sailing under his charter. Maybe Jason felt the same kind of pull in his search for the Golden Fleece. Maybe Sir Galahad after the Holy Grail. I would have believed anything, myth or fairy tale. But when my mind dropped back into reality, it dropped suddenly and it stayed there.
So you see, Philip, my son, in the face of such value, we must maintain utmost caution. To do so, I must ask you to discharge your first officer, Mr. Gallagher.
Kang, discharge Gallagher?
Remember, my son, he was in the employ of Constantino when he signed on with you in San Francisco. He was under a cloud of suspicion in Honolulu and Kobe.
Oh, I know it, Kang, but things have changed. I'd trust that guy with my life. I've done it.
Could it not be, my son, that he would do his utmost to save your life until the treasure was placed aboard your Scarlet Queen? We'll talk about it no longer at this time. I have sent for a man in whom I have the greatest faith, Harry Marlowe. He is an unmatched navigator. He knows the Celebes Sea as he knows his own body. I had hoped to see him beside you on the decks of the Scarlet Queen.
I don't know, Kang. This is awful tough.
But she's still your ship.
We will talk no longer about it.
You will meet him now, at any rate. I have but a word of fatherly warning. His wife, Jean.
Huh?
Poor Marlowe's excellence is based upon the niceties of celestial navigation, I fear, and not upon the niceties of the so-called celestial bliss demanded by a woman like Jean. She is, in short, a huntress. Shall we go?
I knew what he meant when we saw him. Harry Marlowe is the porky type. He forced his clothes at the points of constriction, oozing out over his belt and his collar. The wife, Jean, was a true night-blooming type, her hair blonde, verging on platinum. Her clothes were filled correctly. I saw how easily she herded her husband and the others to one corner of the room, me into another.
I've heard so much about you from Kang. I feel as though I know you very well. He warned me against you.
Warned you?
Yes. He said you're the type that wives leave husbands for. And now I believe him. Just between you and me, Phil, can you blame me for wanting to once in a while?
I don't blame anybody for anything. Believe me, you show great promise. But don't you think you'd better move outside the family circle?
We could be careful, couldn't we?
That's exactly what I am, being gorgeous. I don't want any trouble now.
Perhaps I was mistaken in you.
I'm a little surprised at myself. But thanks for the compliment, anyway.
You're entirely welcome. Schoolboy.
The rest of the meeting was no less nightmarish. We drank our way through Kang's assortment of liquor, had dinner, and when I got to the point where I was hardly able to look Gallagher or Kang in the eye, we left. The next 3 days should have been the best period of the voyage. Kang didn't spare anything in making it a holiday for all of us. The Scarlet Queen went into dry dock for a complete repair and repainting. The crew was brought ashore to live and let go with an expense account limited only by the fact that there were only 24 hours a day to spend it in. Red and I were set up in a suite at the Hotel Metropole with 2 bedrooms and a parlor. I didn't tell Red about Kang's wish. Maybe I should have, so we could have shared one of the most miserable times of my life. But instead, I watched him leave the hotel every afternoon. Watched him crawl back into the room every morning just before dawn. I didn't find out where he'd been spending his time until a little after 2, the morning of the 4th day. And by then it was too late. His face was beaten raw when he came in. There was a look of terror in his eyes that I'd never seen there before.
Skipper.
What's the matter, Red? What's the matter?
Her husband.
Whose husband?
Marlowe. The Marlowe woman.
Now, make a sense. Sit down. Is that who you've been mixed up with?
Yes.
You picked a great one, Red. Anybody but his wife. So Marlowe showed up. What happened?
I don't know, Skipper. I don't know, but he's dead.
Red.
I don't know, Skipper. So help me. But he's shot.
All right, what happened?
He came in and he had a gun in his hand. I made him drop it and we landed on the floor. And she put a gun in my hand. I didn't want it. He landed one in my face then. I was kind of groggy for a second, and then
there was the shot.
Okay, Red.
That's a great story.
It's the best I can do, Skipper. Accidents like that happen. I didn't have any reason to kill him. I wouldn't kill him just to get away from him, would I?
I don't think you would, Red. That's the trouble.
Oh, answer it, Skipper. You know who it is.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, thanks. The police, Red, they're on their way up. Have you got the gun?
Yeah. Here it is.
All right, leave it here. I'll keep it out of sight. Now, you better get out of here, don't you think?
That'll make it look worse.
Nothing will make it look worse. Get out of here. Let me know where you are when you can, and stay undercover. You're hotter than you even think.
Inspector Edwards, Deputy Public Prosecutor's Office. Your name, please?
Philip Carney. What's the occasion? What do you want?
Your chief officer, Mr. Gallagher, is to be held for prosecution, the charge to be murder.
Why, you're crazy.
Mr. Gallagher was discovered in a rather indelicate situation by Mr. Harry Marlowe, the husband of the woman sharing that situation. Do I make myself clear?
Yeah, that has a familiar ring, so...
Naturally, there was a spurt of jealous anger from Marlowe, a bit of defensive action from Gallagher, a scuffle, a shot, and Mr. Marlowe was dead.
Hmm. Self-defense?
If Gallagher were dead and Marlowe alive, yes. Self-defense and justifiable homicide under the unwritten law. It would be so much simpler for all of us if that were the situation, wouldn't it?
Manslaughter?
Possibly. A 5-year minimum sentence in the Federated Malay States. But I'd like to think that it was premeditated.
Oh, not a chance, Edwards. I've known Gallagher for a long time. Long enough to know he wouldn't use a gun to get away from a wrong husband. So, where's your motive?
We both know there was an excellent motive, don't we, Mr. Carney?
What do you mean, Edwards?
We both know that Harry Marlowe was due to take Gallagher's place as chief mate on your vessel, don't we?
But still no motive because Gallagher didn't know. I didn't tell him.
I'm afraid you're a bit mistaken. Gallagher did know.
Where did you get that lie?
From an entirely impeccable source. From your employer, Mr. Carney. Coogee Kang.
Kang? Kang, you still awake?
Yes. I have been waiting for you. Sit down, my boy.
I need some help, Kang. You've heard about everything, I guess. I just want to know one thing. Did you tell Gallagher that Marlowe was going to sail with me?
You should be able to answer that yourself, Philip.
You didn't, did you? The police told me he knew.
I'm afraid he did. I'm afraid Marlowe himself told him.
Why?
Marlowe came here tonight. He was most incensed. He was convinced that his wife involved herself only to keep him from making the trip with you. She had threatened that if he went, she would transfer her affections to the man whose place he took. He left here to explain her insincerity to Mr. Gallagher. He was going to tell him everything.
When did she make that threat, Kang?
The evening after you met them.
Yeah. She's a great little woman.
Perhaps she merely knows men's weakness.
Maybe that's it, Kang. Maybe that's it. I stayed in the suite the next day, waiting for word from Gallagher. It came about 2:30 that afternoon. He was holed up in a room out on Victoria Street in the Chinese section where he thought he'd be safe for a while. Then I left the hotel and went down to get the autopsy report on Marlowe. And after that, I went out to pay my respects to his widow. She was reclining in a wicker chair near a little fountain in the garden of the Marlowe cottage.
Oh, Phil, I'm glad you've come. What about Red?
Well, they haven't found him yet. Not that they don't have the dragnet out.
Well, I know I shouldn't say this, Phil, but I just can't bring myself to hate Red. Because unless there was some strong personal feeling between the two, I think that the shooting in the middle of the struggle was really accidental.
I'm afraid I've got the only real proof, either for him or against him. The gun he was carrying. I know I ought to turn it in, but it's hard to bring myself to do it.
Oh, Phil, what an awful burden.
You know how they are. They'll want to check the bullet they took from your husband's body.
Oh, how terrible for you. I know I can't help, but believe me, whatever you do is your secret. I've forgotten everything you said to me.
Thanks, Mrs. Marlowe. I really didn't come out here to share my problem with you. I wanted to tell you that I'd be in my hotel for the rest of the afternoon. I have to leave for an hour around 5. Then I'll be in for the rest of the night. So if you need anything, want any help, just let me know.
Oh, thank you, Phil. I think I'll be all right.
When I left her, I had 2 hours to arrange the biggest gamble of the voyage. The odds were 2-1 against me. The two figure was divided into the possibility that Red had killed Marlowe to keep his berth, or that it had been accidental during the scuffle, which under the circumstances would be almost as bad. The one against those two was the possibility that Jean had killed Marlowe. And that was based upon the faint, hazy fact that she tried to involve me before she'd gotten her hooks into Red. It was weak, but I'd caught 100-pound shark on 50-pound test line. All I could do was try. I grabbed a cab out to Victoria Street and found Red huddled in a ratty room about the size of a Queen's bed locker.
What's doing, Skipper?
I don't know, Red. Oh, nice place you got here.
Yeah. And don't think I haven't been kicking myself around it once in a while.
I'll give you a hand next time around. Red, tell me one thing. Did you know there was talk of giving Marlowe your berth on the Queen?
My berth? What's the matter, Skipper? Why'd you want to give him my berth?
Okay. That's all I wanted to hear, Red.
What's the matter, Skip? Haven't I been all right?
Sure you have, Red. I didn't want to give him your berth. Now shut up, will you? Drop it.
Well, you...
Marlowe didn't say anything about it when he came in, huh?
No. He didn't say anything.
How about the woman?
Something about too late. It didn't make any difference if he left or not. That's when he rushed me.
Yeah. Okay, Red, come on. We're going to gamble.
On what?
On whether she knocked him off or it was all... Oh,
I hope you don't mind, gentlemen.
Hello, Edward.
Did you have any reason to lure me here, Carney?
No, you can go anytime you want.
Then you've become dreadfully careless and an outstandingly simple accessory. You see the gun, gentlemen? We'll leave now.
Oh, wait a minute, Edward. You said you liked premeditated murder instead of manslaughter. Would you be willing to give us an hour and a half?
I most certainly would not.
Then I guess we'll have to resist arrest, Edwards. We can't go with you.
Be reasonable, gentlemen. I have to take you.
Then you shouldn't have come alone. There we are, Red. One of us will get you, Edward. Take your choice.
You're my choice, Connie.
It wasn't foolhardiness. It was desperation. We had to get out of there. We separated, putting him between us. He started backing toward a wall. I wasted two breaths and glanced at Red. He started to rush and stopped. Edward's eyes swung his way for an instant, and I landed prone in front of him and rolled into him. His shots gouged the 4 inches away from me, and Red hit him from behind. Between us, we quieted him down. We shut the gag in his mouth, trussed him up with our belts. And when we left, there were two of us on the wrong side of the Singapore law. We sneaked into the hotel suite through the rear entrance. And a few minutes before 5, I made my public exit for the benefit of Mrs. Harry Marlowe. I circled the building, went back to the room by way of the rear door again, and settled down to wait for her to pick up the cue I'd given her and sneak into the room to trade the murder weapon for the one Red had left with me. It was a good plan. It was very clever. But it didn't work. 6 o'clock, Red and I looked at one another.
What now, Skipper?
I don't know.
Maybe she'll still come.
If you were going into somebody's room and you knew they'd be out between 5 and 6, would you be late?
But we still got the gun. If that isn't the one that killed him, I'm in the clear. Isn't that right?
Yeah. We got the gun. Edwards isn't going to stay lashed up all night. You wait here, Red. I'm going out. Maybe I'll get another brilliant idea. But that particular Singapore night didn't seem to be the one for brilliant ideas. I didn't dare go out through the lobby. I slipped out the back, started toward the Marlowe cottage. But with every step, it became more obvious that there was no purpose in going anyplace. If she'd held to her story through my bluff, there was no way I could jar her off of it. I got a half a block away, and the weight of the situation stopped me. Without a better answer for Marlowe's murder than the one they had already, there was no way for me to turn. With the Edwards thing, I was in as deeply as Red. That meant Malay State's law. That led to jungle prison. No, I couldn't see it. I turned around and headed for the front entrance to the Metropole with my mind made up to go to Kang. Ask him to take care of the crew, keep his eyes closed, or Red and I tried to make it out of the city to wherever we could get. A scattering of early diners was strolling towards the hotel, and like during my first visit to the hotel, but at the other extreme, I wondered if I looked as obvious as I felt. I hugged the shrubbery at the edge of the wide sidewalk, and I'd almost reached the doorway when a whisper stopped me.
Phil.
Stopped my feet, my heart, and my mind.
Phil, I want to talk to you.
Hello, Jean. What are you doing here?
I've been waiting for you. Come into the garden with me.
All right, Jean. What do you want?
You expected me to come to your room, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You expected me to bring this gun and leave it there, didn't you? But it was a trap, wasn't it?
What do you want, Jim?
I came to kill you. Because that stupid Gallagher gave you that gun instead of throwing it away like I told him to. And you're the only one who can prove that he didn't kill Harry Marlowe. You got the autopsy report. You know they took the bullet from his body.
And that it won't check with Red's gun. That's right. But it won't do you any good to kill me, Jim. How long have you been here?
I've been waiting since 5.
Then you don't know that Inspector Edwards is at your house now waiting for you.
You're lying. He isn't there.
Give me the gun, Jean.
No, you're lying.
Gallagher has been cleared. He's down on the ship now.
You're lying. They can't even kill you.
He's cracking up. Settle down.
You're lying.
Settle down or I'll take the gun away from you. And then where will you be? You want me to take you home, Jean?
No. Edwards. He's there. Take me to your room. You can help me out of this.
Sure, gorgeous. We can help you out of this. Now drop the gun before I break your arm. Later that same night, the deputy public prosecutor's office got a more coherent confession than she'd given me. She'd been trying to get rid of her husband for the past 2 years by every method in or out of the book. And when two guys with potential motives arrived, me to keep Gallagher in his berth, and Red to keep himself in it, she'd gone to work. She'd missed me and caught Red and killed her husband during the fight she'd arranged herself. Later that night, the DPP's office had also received a very agitated inspector named Edwards. And at about that time, Red and I were two-thirds through our second or third celebration bottle of Kang's White Mule in his rooms at the Metropole. Kang took me aside.
Philip, my son, you are a young man with a stubborn will.
Instinct, Kang. I know a good chief mate when I see one.
There is no argument left in me. If you will submit to what you have recently experienced to keep Gallagher aboard, then, Gallagher, it will be. Your hand, Philip. I wish to congratulate you on your police work.
You mean the simple threat of checking the slug to her gun?
I believe that is what, as they say, cracked the case.
Yeah, it did, Kang. But it would have been enough if somebody had asked me to make the threat good. That slug, it had hit Marlowe's belt buckle on the way in. It was so misshapen they couldn't have checked it to any gun.
Surprising revelation, my son. Bitter proof that even the wisdom of Confucius blanches before the luck of the Irish.
By 9 the next morning, we'd slipped out through the islands that fill Singapore Harbor. And as we headed into Main Street, we picked up the trades, whistling down toward the equator.
Stand by to make sail!
Queen looked like the cover girl on a dollar yachting magazine in her new paint and her new varnish. The new hemp in her running rigging was stiff in the crew's hand. The big expanse of the mainsail crackled into the breeze, and the streak of sunlight on the shining mainmast glistened and moved as the tall spar leaned a little under the wind.
To the jump sheet, men! Smartly now!
White and untried rode out. The mizzen, creaking with newness, swung over my head. And the Scarlet Queen brazenly showed her shining side as she buckled into the run toward British North Borneo.
I'm trying to think of a time when I felt better, and I can't. For me, you can have Singapore. What's our next port, Skipper?
Thundercat. And listen, Red.
Yeah?
Now, I hope you aren't going to mind a little fatherly advice.
No, sir.
Now, you'll have to admit that woman was dynamite.
Yes, sir.
So from now on, when you meet some charmer, you bring her to your captain.
That doesn't sound so good.
Oh, we'll get references, letters of recommendation, things like that. That won't be much fun, but we'll keep you out of trouble.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, now, a bottle, please.
Yes, sir.
Clink, Skipper.
Sir? You need one worse than I do.
After you, mate, after you. Log entry, the catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled from San Francisco, 13,463. Sky fair, wind rising. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Broderick Crawford in tonight's presentation of
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the story of a man whose welcome home party promised little gaiety and many tears, and surely his death. It's called Parole to Panic. Our star, Mr. Broderick Crawford.
This is Harlow Wilcox reminding you that there's no time like right now to enter the giant Autolite family charity drawing. $100,000 in cash is waiting to be distributed to the recognized local or national charities chosen by the 25 persons selected in this great event. You may be one of those persons. To enter is as simple as printing your name and address. Listen to this on-the-spot interview with a woman in Connecticut.
Hello, I'm Bob Emmerich. What's your name?
Mrs. Allen Gulliver.
I understand that you signed up for this drawing here at this Autolite family car dealer, Salvatore Brothers. Is that right?
That's right.
Did you find it difficult?
Absolutely not. I signed my name and address on a registration form, and that was it.
Was there any obligation of any sort?
None whatsoever.
I see. Well, thank you very, very much, Miss Gulliver.
Thank you.
So, friends, visit any or all of these Autolite family car showrooms. DeSoto, Hudson, Plymouth, Studebaker, Dodge, Willis, Nash, Packard, Kaiser, or Chrysler. Sign up tomorrow.
And now, Autolite presents transcribed Mr. Broderick Crawford in Parole to Panic, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
Outside.
Yeah.
Pretty good, huh?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Enjoy it.
Hmm?
What I mean is, don't come back here. It's a pretty good life out there.
I won't be back. 2 years is enough for me.
Taking the train to town?
No, I don't think so. My wife's supposed to pick me up if she can borrow a car.
Well, good luck. It's not going to be easy for you.
Yeah, I know.
If there's anything I can do, if you need someone to talk to, advice, you know.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Warden. Thanks for seeing me to the door.
I like you, Paul. Don't let me down.
I won't.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, sir.
Paul! Paul! Over here, Paul!
Jenny!
Oh, Paul, Paul.
Oh, darling.
Oh, did I keep you waiting long?
No, only a couple of seconds.
I was so afraid to drive fast. This is our car, you know.
Our car?
I bought it yesterday. It's for you.
Oh, sort of a coming out present, huh?
Don't joke, Paul. Don't ever joke about being in prison.
Well, what do you want me to do, cry?
No. Because that's what I know you're doing when you joke about it.
Come on, let's sit in the car. I still feel kind of funny about all this space to move around in.
All right. Slide in on this side. You drive.
Okay. Where'd you get the money to buy a car?
I only had to make the down payment on it. We'll manage the rest.
I'll manage the rest.
What?
Oh, I don't know if this is the time to talk about it, but I'm going to have to find a job. Can't have you taking care of me, you know.
Oh, that's all taken care of.
It is?
Yes. I told my boss what you knew about fixing radios and what you'd done while you were in the Army, and he arranged a job for you at the plant.
Did you tell him where I'd been for the past 2 years?
Yes, Paul.
Oh. I don't know how I ever got mixed up with that gang, Jenny.
Let's not talk about it.
Too bad the district attorney didn't get them all while he was at it.
It's over, dear. Let's forget it. There are other things to think about now.
Jenny.
Yes?
I love you, Jenny. I love you very much.
I'm so glad, dear.
Shall we go home now?
Yes. Let's. Tired?
No, I feel great.
Do you realize you've driven all the way from that place in only 2 hours?
Oh, it's not me, Jenny. It's the equipment. You got a real good deal here.
Mr. Miller found it for me.
Does he still have the same store?
Yes, why?
Well, I've got to see him right now.
After you report to the parole officer.
No. He said I had to report to him before I went home, but he didn't say anything about seeing Mr. Miller.
But Paul...
Oh, now, don't worry. It'll only take a minute or two.
Well... All right, but only a minute or two. You promise?
Yeah, I promise.
pick it up this afternoon. Yes, he'll deliver you a fresh dozen eggs. Good. Yes. Good. Yes. Goodbye, Mrs. Gordon. And what can I... Paul! Jenny!
How are you, Mr. Miller?
Well, Paul, it's good to see you. Well, you look fine.
I feel fine, too. I just dropped by to thank you for taking care of Jenny while I was gone. You know, the groceries and...
Not another word, Paul. You and Jenny are like my own. Besides, as soon as Jenny got a job, she paid me back.
Well, anyway, thanks.
Now, let me look at you. You're a good boy, Paul. Everything will be happy again.
Yeah, sure it will. Tell Roger I was here and I'll see him later, will you?
Tell him yourself.
What?
He's here, in the back room. Roger!
Never mind. I'll go back there.
All right.
I won't be long, darling.
Good.
Hi, Roger.
Oh, Paul. Come on in. Well, it's good to see you, Paul.
Yeah, it's good to be here, too.
When'd you get back?
I just drove into town.
I'm sorry I couldn't do better for you at the trial.
Oh, you did fine. I don't know what would have happened to me if you hadn't defended me. Look, as soon as I get some money and a job, I'll pay you.
Oh, relax. No hurry. Paul?
Yeah?
Have you talked to anyone since you got back? I mean, outside of Pa and me.
No, I just told you. I just drove into town. Why?
Well, you know the DA didn't get the whole gang when they lowered the boom.
Yeah, sure. I know that.
Well, there's a rumor going around that they're waiting for you when you get out.
Why? What have I done?
They say you turned state's evidence.
But I didn't. I only told them the truth about what I knew.
I know that, but they don't.
All right, then I'll tell them.
You're not going to have a chance to do it.
Why not?
I understand this is only what I've heard through the grapevine. But I hear they're going to shoot first and then ask questions.
Well, then what am I going to do?
I don't know.
Maybe I can get somebody to take a message for me.
Paul.
What?
Paul, they won't believe anything you say.
Why not?
Because they don't want to believe you. They're looking for a pigeon.
Oh, and I'm it, huh?
You're it.
You think I ought to leave town?
Why don't you go to the police? They put you under protective custody.
What am I going to tell them?
Just what I told you that I heard.
No, Roger. If the police followed every crackpot rumor they heard, they'd run themselves ragged.
But this isn't a crackpot rumor.
They don't know that.
No, but we
Look,
know...
I'm going to get out of town. Jenny's got enough money to keep us going for a while.
Well, keep in touch. If you need anything, just let me know.
Yeah, sure, I will. Thanks.
Sorry, I can't help more.
Well, there's nothing more you can do, Roger. So long.
Bye.
Where are we going?
Home, to pack.
Well, what for?
We're leaving town.
Why? Why are we leaving town?
They're after me.
Why? Who's after you?
The rest of the gang.
Well, what did you do?
I told the truth in court. They call it ratting, singing, squealing. Just take your choice.
Oh, who told you all this?
Roger Miller.
But what about your job?
I can't keep it if I'm dead.
Oh, there must be something we can do.
Yeah, there is, and we're doing it. We're getting out.
Look, Paula, are you sure about all this?
I'm not going to wait for a bullet to make me certain.
Well, all right, if you think it's best.
I can't take the chance that I could be wrong. This happened so quickly that I got to get out of town, even if it's just so I can think clearly.
Do they know you're back in town?
No, I don't think so. That's why we better hurry.
Well, where out of town are we going?
I don't know. All I know is I'd better get out if I want to stay alive. Got to get the overnight bag filled here. Let me see. This is it, I guess. What else do you need?
Well, I'm all set here. How about your clothes?
Oh, I don't know if they still fit, but I pack what suits look to be in shape. You ready?
Yes. Oh, are you sure, Paul? Are you sure Roger was right? He could be wrong,
yeah,
you
sure
know?
He could be, but... Hello?
Hello, Paul.
Who is this?
You're gonna die today, Paul.
Who was it?
They know, Jenny. They know I'm back in town. I'll be right back. Mr. Miller.
Oh, what is it? You look so...
Where's Roger?
He went to court. He has a case today. Why?
Doesn't make any difference. Look, Mr. Miller, do you have a gun?
A gun? Yes, I have a gun, but I...
All right, give it to me.
What?
I need a gun, Mr. Miller. Please let me have it.
You don't know what you're doing, Paul. A gun. I'm sorry, but
Mr.
I can't...
Mr. Miller, please, it's my life. I gotta have a gun.
But why?
I haven't got time to explain now. Ask Roger when he gets back. He'll tell you all about it.
I have a permit. He'll want to know where you...
It'll be all right. Just give me the gun, please. I gotta hurry.
You say Roger will tell
you? Yeah, he'll tell you. Please, Mr. Miller, hurry.
Well, all right. Here, Paul. I'm doing a wrong thing, but if Roger says it... Be careful, Paul.
Yeah, I will.
Why did you have to stop there?
I had to get something.
What?
A gun.
Oh, Paul, you're on parole. If they catch you with a gun...
They won't catch me. As soon as we're out of town, I'm going to ditch it.
Oh, Paul, isn't there a chance Roger might have been wrong? Maybe they've forgotten about you.
No, not with that telephone call I got just before. Jenny.
Yes, Paul?
We're being followed.
How do you know?
I know. Watch when we go around the corner. Watch that blue sedan about a half a block in back. See them?
No. There they are.
All right, now watch the next corner. Well, Jenny?
Yes. They're following us, Paul.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Broderick Crawford with Paula Winslow in Parole to Panic, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Now, we'd like you to hear a recording of another on-the-spot interview in connection with the Autolite family charity drawing. This time with a policeman in Bronxville, New York.
And what is your name, officer?
Patrolman James Morris of the Bronxville Police Department.
I understand that you've signed up for the Autolite family charity drawing. Is that right? Uh-huh. And should your name be selected, how would you care to designate the money?
I would split it three ways. Cancer Fund, Heart Fund, and Bronxville PBA.
Very fine. And may I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you help your favorite local or national charity, too? It won't cost you a cent, and you have an opportunity to be among the 25 persons selected. Remember, there's nothing to try or buy, nothing to write or solve. All you do is visit any Autolite family car dealer showroom and fill out a registration form. So why not visit any one or all of these car dealers? DeSoto, Hudson, Plymouth, Studebaker, Dodge, Willis, Nash, Packard, Kaiser, or Chrysler. There's not much time left, so sign up tomorrow.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Broderick Crawford with Paula Winslow in Elliot Lewis's presentation of Parole to Panic, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, Jenny?
They're still following us.
What are they doing? Torturing me? Follow us this closely, they can catch us anytime they want to.
Oh, go to the police, Paul. Don't be afraid.
I'm not afraid of the police. It's what's back of us that I'm afraid of.
Well, then let the police take care of them.
Don't you see? If I go to the station and stop the car, they'll blast before I get to the front door. That's why they're following us so closely.
Well, they have to be crazy.
Yeah, they are crazy. But if I stop, I'll be dead and they'll still be crazy. No, we gotta lose them. Then we'll figure out something.
No.
Good. I think we lost him this time.
What do we do now?
Well, we're almost out of gas. We better stop.
Well, all right. But I...
But what?
Oh, call the police. Tell them what's happened.
I intend to, Jenny. This is pretty open country. I guess we better stop at the first station we see. I'll telephone while they're filling the tank.
Well, I'm starting to feel a little better.
Yeah, so am I.
Oh, Paul, there's a station.
Yeah, I see it.
What'll it be?
Fill her up, will you?
Right, sir.
Say, you've got change for a quarter?
Yes, I think so. Here. Help yourself.
Okay. 10, 20, 25. Here's your quarter.
Just drop it.
Right. Say, where's the phone?
Back of the station.
Thanks a lot. Operator. Operator, I want the police. Yes, my name is...
Paul! Paul, they just drove past. I think they saw the car.
What?
They're stopping down the road.
Come on.
14 already, mister. I don't think she'll take much more.
Hey, Jenny! Jenny, they're turning around.
Hey, mister, you didn't wait for... Hey, what are you trying to pull? Hey!
How'd they find us? How?
I don't know.
Oh, Jenny. Oh. Jenny,
what?
Listen to me.
What is it?
This car isn't fast enough to stay away from.
Well, then what'll we do?
I'm going to turn in the first side road we come to, and then you're getting out.
No, I won't do it.
You got to. I can't.
I'm not getting out of the car.
Jenny, they'll kill you, too.
I don't care. I've been away from you long enough.
All right, then we'll keep going.
Do you know where we are?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way we can get back to town from here.
It'll be dark soon.
I know that.
Maybe we can get away then.
Catch up to us before dark. They can catch us anytime they want to.
Paul, do you know where we are?
I told you before, Jenny.
No. I mean, you remember the cabin where we spent a weekend, the first winter we were married?
Yeah, why?
Well, it was on a road that turned off this one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure. We got that cabin from one of the boys, do you remember?
Yes, but it's better than sitting in the car and waiting for them.
Okay, let's go. You remember where the side road was?
Well, pretty soon now, I... Just past a bridge, I think.
Oh, Jenny, I hope you're right.
Oh, I do too, Paul. I do too.
Locked.
I don't have a key.
All right, I'll kick it in.
Hurry, Paul. I hear them.
Yeah, so do I. Step back, Jenny. All right, stay away from the windows. There's enough light yet for him to shoot. Let's push this table against the door. Come on.
Okay.
Here they are. Okay, Jenny. You stand over there. As soon as I come up the steps, I'm going to start shooting.
Maybe they're afraid.
No, they couldn't be, because they know I am.
What are they waiting for?
I don't know. I haven't even gotten out of the car yet.
Do they know you have a gun?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. I wish they'd do something.
Paul...
What? Wait. Wait a minute. They're on their way.
Paul.
What?
There's a telephone in the cabin.
Where?
I think it's in that cabinet on your left.
Okay. Yeah, here it is. Hello. Hello, operator. It's disconnected.
Did you say it was disconnected?
Either that or they just cut the wire. Yeah, that's what happened. One of them just cut the wires.
Where are they going?
I don't know.
Maybe they changed their minds, huh?
No, I doubt it.
Well, then why would they drive away?
Well, they didn't go far.
But why did they go at all?
They're not sure whether I got a gun or not. If I have one, they know they're asking for it if they rush the cabin.
How long can we stay here?
Jenny, we're leaving now.
But you said they're just down the road.
We're going to leave on foot.
What?
Tell me. Can you walk much in those shoes you got on?
But yes, the heels are pretty low. Why?
All right. We'll head into the woods. Go east as far as we can. We'll sleep out in the open tonight. And we'll head for the first house we see when daylight hits.
All right, Paul.
I'm going to go out first. You follow me in a couple of seconds.
Yes.
Now help me with this table in front of the door. I don't want to slide it.
All right.
Yeah, it looks clear. A few seconds, Jenny, remember that. Then follow me.
I will.
Suck at me, Jenny. They had a guy planted out there.
Oh, you're bleeding, Paul.
Yeah, I'm hurt. I'm hurt bad.
We gotta try to stop the bleeding.
Try all you want to. I don't think you can do it.
But we've got to try.
Yeah, they're back to pick up the body. They're sure gonna be disappointed, aren't they?
Oh, Paul, I'm frightened. I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to help you.
Just stay close to me, Jenny. Stay close. I'll think of something.
Paul?
Yeah, Jenny?
Are you...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still bleeding.
Let me talk to them. They'll listen to me. I'm a woman. You've got to get a doctor.
No, Jenny. That's what they want. Don't you understand? They want me to die, and I'm going to.
Don't say that, Paul. Don't say
it's
that.
It's true, Jenny. It's true. But, well, I'm not going to die alone.
What are you going to do?
They haven't gotten out of the car since they came back. That means they're all together. Well, I still got 4 slugs left in the gun. I'm going to use them. Get back, Jenny. I got to break this window. You out there. Why don't you come in and get me? All right, I'll come out and get you.
Take it easy. You're going to be fine.
Who are you?
Police.
Jenny. Where's Jenny?
Here I am, darling.
When did they get here?
Just after you came out shooting.
How did you find me?
Roger Miller called us after you got the gun from his father.
But how did you know where to look?
You left the receiver off the hook in the service station. There we checked all the side roads looking for a big gasoline stain where you might have turned off the main road.
Gasoline?
The attendant was still pumping gas into your car when you drove away. He never got the chance to replace the cap on your tank.
Oh. We'll pick it up some other time. Won't we, Jenny?
Yes, Paul. We'll pick it up some other time.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite, tonight's star, Mr. Broderick Crawford.
This is Harlow Wilcox again. Whatever your favorite charity, local or national, you may help it collect thousands of dollars by just printing your name and address. That's all you do to enter the Autolite Family Charity Drawing. And if you are one of 25 chosen, you'll name any recognized charity you wish for a share of $100,000. Your friends and neighbors are signing up enthusiastically. Listen to this typical comment by an Elizabeth, New Jersey woman.
This is Mrs. Morris Cohen, who just signed up for this drawing. Now, Mrs. Cohen, when you signed, did you have any difficulties whatsoever?
None at all. Just sign my name and address.
I see. Should your name be selected, how would you care to designate the money?
Three chapters in Elizabeth. The cerebral palsy, the heart fund, the cancer.
I think that's wonderful, and may I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
So give your favorite recognized charity the opportunity of a lifetime. Sign up at any or all of these Autolite family car showrooms. DeSoto, Hudson, Plymouth, Studebaker, Dodge, Willis, Nash, Packard, Kaiser, or Chrysler. Do it tomorrow, sure. And now, Betty Goody of Radio TV Mirror Magazine and the producer of Suspense, Elliot Lewis.
It is my pleasure, Elliot, to inform you that the readers of Radio TV Mirror again have selected Suspense as their favorite radio mystery program. Here's your award, a gold medal and a scroll, and congratulations to you and Autolite.
Thank you very much, Betty, and thanks also to all you Suspense listeners who voted for us.
You'll find an interesting story and pictures on the annual awards in the current issue of Radio TV Mirror magazine.
Next week, the story of a man who tried to learn a lesson the hard way. He bet his life on the turn of a card. It's called The Card Game. Our star, Mr. Richard Widmark. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is transcribed and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The role to Panic was written for Suspense by Ross Murray. In tonight's story, Paula Winslow was heard as Jenny. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Junius Matthews, Hi Averbeck, and Barney Phillips.
Broderick Crawford may soon be seen co-starring with Gregory Peck in the 20th Century Fox picture, Night People.
And remember, next week, Mr. Richard Widmark in The Card Game.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
It's going to do it for the show this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with an episode from Bold Venture and more from Suspense. In the meantime, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Links to this and all the shows, past episodes, links to our forum, Facebook page, all that stuff. There's also a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. I appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thanks to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Be back again next Tuesday with another hour of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.